Veronika Potakova, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
So
How are you?
you are in Hong Kong, and you have recently gained your PhD in psychology, and you're a martial arts teacher, practitioner, and competitor, and you recently hurt your toe because we were meant to be having this meeting a few days, a week or so ago, weren't we? But you injured yourself. Tell us about that first.
about my toe?
Yeah.
Well, it's just like a small injury. Since I started with MMA, there's like always something going on.
So. Right, always an injury.
Right.
And so you got your PhD from Hong Kong Baptist University, and it involved the study of martial arts communities.
Right. So I got my PhD in sports psychology, the department in Department of Physical Education. Now it's sports and physical education. They changed just after I finished my PhD. They changed the name. And I study psychological collectivism and mental toughness in traditional wushu.
Okay. And what's your argument, and what was your argument, and how did you go about exploring your kind of hypothesis?
Well, so I did a mixed method study, so it was huge. So I did a qualitative part, which was the IPA, interpretative phenomenological analysis, and then structure equation modeling for the quantitative one. So both of them were like huge, big enough for like PhD standing by itself. And what I did is I look at the communities of traditional martial arts, specifically Kung Fu, traditional Wushu, and the way how people behave using some existing literature, but also my master's research. Mm-hmm. And I use the framework of collectivism, but not the cultural collectivism, but psychological collectivism, which basically says that it doesn't matter whether you are coming from culture A or culture B, but it, like, you have already both collectivistic and individualistic types of personality or behavior inside of you that are activated by the situation you are in. So I was basically saying that, or I was researching whether martial art can be such a situation. And I connected this with mental toughness. For example, if this kind of community can make you more mentally tough or not.
Okay, and do you think that it can? Do you think that it does?
Well, so according to my results, I found a connection between mental toughness and collectivism. But I actually, for my qualitative part, I only interview like traditional martial art people. But for my quantitative part, I also got the questionnaires from modern Wushu people as well. So I was comparing those two groups. And the interesting thing is that there was no connection in the modern Wushu people group, but there was a connection in the traditional Wushu people group.
Okay. And you, I mean, you are a bit of a kind of cross-cultural traveler yourself, aren't you? I mean, what did that affect your starting position and your interest, the fact that you chose to travel to Hong Kong from the Czech Republic specifically because of your interest in martial arts? Is that right?
Yeah, right. So I came to Hong Kong because of Kung Fu, because my Sifu is in Hong Kong. And then I started my PhD. So the PhD was like not the first thing. And it wasn't that what I was like going through, then I would put into my work. But then what I learned from the interviewees was quite like similar to what I was going through. So like there was lots of control. There was lots of it was a topic of like, you have to show that you are serious enough, that there is the group of outsiders and insiders, those who come for 1 or 2 weeks per year and like the teachers would behave differently to this group and then to the group that actually stays in Hong Kong or come for longer time. Topic of final suffering and this kind of thing. So yes, definitely.
Okay, and I'm gonna share a screen. So this is an article that you published in the journal Martial Arts Studies. Mm-hmm. And it's Psychological Collectivism in Traditional Martial Arts by you. And is this the core? Do we get the core of your argument here, or is this just a sort of side part of it?
Well, you do, but the second part of my framework, which is the mental toughness, is not in the paper. But for the collectivism, yes, this is like the core thing.
Okay, so tell us about psychological collectivism. I mean, what does that actually mean when you use the term?
So collectivism and individualism, right? So if I explain it on like cultural type of collectivism, it's more easy to understand. So if you are collectivisting, that means that you are going for a tight-knit kind of society, or you prefer your in-groups. You are more looking at like the goals of the entire group. You prefer not to argue with the members of your group, but to have like good relationship with them instead of like going for the outcome. You are okay with hierarchy, like making it really simple, right? Mm-hmm. So like typically we would say like Chinese society is kind of collectivistic, or lots of collectivistic, very collectivistic. But it's not like black and white, it's not like one and zero, right? It goes like, it's more like a, I mean, like it can like go from individualistic towards collectivistic, and it depends where you are. But in terms of psychological one, it's actually not that often researched. This is based on the, well, on the individual. So this theory says that even though if you are from wealth, you can still be very collectivistic in some specific situation, and you can be also very individualistic in very different kind of situation, because it turns on different facets of your like your personality.
Okay, and so you when you arrived in Hong Kong, maybe you felt like you're from an individualistic society where there's not much deference for kind of hierarchy and close-knit structures. And did you come to Hong Kong knowing that this would be your framework, or did you get to Hong Kong, start studying, and go, wow, this is a very different kind of society, and kind of pursue it that way?
Well, I was kind of knowing what I want to do, because my master's research was about Kung Fu teachers in Czech, and this is one of the topics that was like coming out, like this kind of collectivistic thinking. So I didn't know exactly what I will research, and I didn't know that I will go into psychologic type of collectivism. Mm-hmm. And the mental toughness was like also totally new. Mm-hmm. But yes, yeah, so I had some kind of idea, but definitely like when I arrived to Hong Kong and I was like, I faced the reality of actually living here and trying to become as close as possible to the center of the group, of my Kung Fu group, like that's like eye opener.
Okay. So I'm going to share the screen again. So I've been looking around, and there's a lot of videos of you doing different things, and like competitions and interviews and so on and so on. And some of them relate to classical or traditional Chinese Kung Fu mm-hmm. type form competitions. And elsewhere online, you look like you're very invested in MMA. So what's the story there? What's your what do you train and where?
So I started in 1999 with karate in Czech, and then I switched to kung fu. The style is called Hunkyun or Hunga, and then I moved to Hong Kong because I wanted to study it from the source. So I decided to move to Hong Kong. That was some 6 years ago. And well, while I was here, the problem with Kung Fu here is, and it's like a cliche, because everyone's talking about it. The people here, they like to train the forms, they like to do the movement, but they don't want to do any kind of sparring. Most of the schools, not all of them, but I train much more sparring in Europe than actually here in Asia. So I start to look for some kind of platform when I could spar, not necessarily like learn a new style, but more like where I could spar with other people. Mm-hmm. And so I went through Sanda, boxing. And then I thought, okay, maybe MMA is a good one because you have the gloves without fingers, so that must be good for Hukyun. I totally had did no research, so I was not ready for what was coming. And so I started once per week, and I was like, okay, but I'm never gonna compete in this. This is just so I can spar, because I believe if you do martial arts, especially if you are teaching, you have to spar, you have to be able to use it. It's like your responsibility. Mm-hmm. And then I competed, and now I want to turn professional, and I'm spending lots of time in MMA actually. So that's now the reason why I'm staying in Asia.
Okay, so you're considering maybe a sideline to the academic world, or instead of the world, or kind of from.
I recently quit my academic work actually. I changed my job, and now I'm working more remote. With a great company working on alternative education in Hong Kong, which is basically my roots, because that's what I studied back in Czech for my bachelor and master's. So now I can go for training camps and on the side I also coach. So now is the time for really fighting and training. If I come back to the university, if I go back to work there, I'm not sure, but probably not in Asia.
Okay. When I've been looking at the kind of forms competitions that you've done, I've seen that online. It's very kind of detailed stuff, isn't it? I mean, how does the range of techniques that you've practiced in Kung Fu relate to what you're going to do in MMA, or what it's possible to do within MMA? How does it work out?
That's really good question. Lots of people keep asking me if my Kung Fu actually works in MMA. And the thing is, the problem with Kung Fu is not that it's not, that you're not able to use it, but there's a burn bridge between the application and the fighting, because the application drills, they are not fighting yet, right? Mm-hmm. That's not free sparring. But this space is not taught. Usually you don't train this kind of part in traditional school, or at least here around me in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in my MMA class, quite often when my coach is teaching me something, I can relate this. Okay, I know this from Hukyun. This is the same thing. This footwork is the same thing. The steps are the same thing. So the angles, kind of like the biomechanics, is the same. But I'm now learning how to use it from different perspective, and I believe that quite soon I can actually close the circle. But for now, I'm trying to stay humble and learn and take everything that I'm getting without trying to push my Hukyun into MMA. Yeah. And when the time is correct and my basics are good enough, then I try to connect it together. But the truth is also that I feel I'm 31. I'm not 18. So a lot of people would say I'm too old for MMA now, for professional MMA, but no. So I feel good. I'm faster, stronger than ever. And I'm pretty sure that this is because Kung Fu, my balance is good. The way how I learn things or how I see things is very affected by Kung Fu. So
Okay, I mean, so as someone who studied communities and senses of belonging and notions of mental toughness or psychological toughness and resilience, how do you compare the two environments within Hong Kong, the two kind of the two worlds, really? I suppose are they similar communities, or is one more westernized or more individualistic, and another one more collectivist?
Well, both of the communities are very local. There are lots of more expat type of gyms, but I go to a local one. Actually, it's local and Thai. So it's like a mix of Chinese and Thai culture. So both of them, my Kung Fu school and my MMA school, they are quite collectivistic. But it's because like we are here in Hong Kong. Right, yeah, mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. So there's no sense of, because often the reason I'm thinking of is the way in which there's a sense in which people in the West, and I've talked about this with various people on this sort of podcast, people in the West say that things like MMA like have no kind of cultural however, that's a very Eurocentric view, because there's another view which says, oh, like China, the PRC are very, they feel a bit pressured by the global growth of MMA because they want to retain some cultural capital and some prestige for something that they regard as indigenous Chinese martial arts. So that's why there's been a force to kind of really propel Sanda and things like this into the, mm-hmm. into the, as a kind of a statement. If MMA is a statement, then Sanda mm-hmm. is the response. So that's where I'm coming from with the question. It's like, can we really simplify things so that we'll say there's traditional Chinese martial arts and they have certain sorts of community, and then you have an MMA gym, which is a Western intrusion into, I mean, I know Hong Kong's a difficult kind of to generalize about, but that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. One thing that actually I want to mention is that Kung Fu in Hong Kong is like, I mean, traditional one, not modern Wushu, but Kung Fu is connected with lower social class. So even nowadays, parents, they prefer to put their kids into Taekwondo or, you know, anything more like non-local, because they want to get too close to this like stigma.
Okay.
So for like more educated layers of the society, not too many people we can actually find in the kung fu circle. For MMA, of course, there are like people who are also not educated, but I think the educational level of the people is a bit higher.
Okay.
And there was one more thing I wanted to say. Oh right, yeah. What you were mentioning about the ego and collectivistic, individualistic thing, is that I've been to Japan, train in a gym in Japan, just for a short visit, and I was really surprised. It was just when I was starting with MMA, I was really surprised because the level of depth of the technique and how the people behave with the, you know, bow in the beginning and at the end and clean up the floor and everything was exactly how you would expect it from like a karate school or like traditional martial arts school. It was MMA. Mm-hmm. So I was really shocked to see that.
Okay.
So the flavor of MMA in Asia is like specific. It's very specific. Like Japan is like this, and then more Brazilian flavor is more like surfers and, you know, chill out. And but when I train with people, especially like high level people in Thailand, when I go for a camp, then usually like the higher ranking people, like if I mean like one or UFC fighters, they are very like respectful, polite. They pretty much have the characteristic of like traditional martial arts warrior, if I put it this way.
Okay. What was that? So you were talking about how Kung Fu is regarded as somehow lower class or less educated or less culturally sophisticated. But when I went to Hong Kong a long time ago and trained in a Choi Li Fook club, and they were all Westerners. Everyone there was a Westerner. I mean, the class was carried out in a kind of half Cantonese and half English, uh-huh. But it was mainly Westerners. And I look at the Facebook group membership of the class, and it's still mm-hmm. like dominantly Westerners. And mm-hmm. and there was all sorts of jokes about that. But I mean, so Westerners kind of, the sense I got was that Westerners go to Hong Kong looking for Chinese martial arts. But like, I guess locally, it's not quite, it has a different meaning in the local context, as opposed to the kind of international context in which we all have our kung fu fantasies. So we need to go to Asia to realize them. I mean, does that ring a bell, or is that?
Yeah, well, there are a few schools here or gyms. I think like modern war for the correct word now is gym. There are a few gyms that are run by Westerners or that have lots of Westerners. Yeah. They use lots of English, but that's like not a typical thing. My school doesn't have a website at all. Mm-hmm. My sifu speaks English, but usually the class is like 100% Cantonese, and quite often no one would like talk to you. Not because they were rude, but just they don't feel the urge to talk to you. So usually I am the only foreigner there. So when I came to Hong Kong, and before I found MMA, actually MMA was for me very kind of like mental first aid. Because so I was spending my time either doing my PhD or in my Kung Fu school or training alone. So I didn't have, I have almost no human interaction because no one was talking to me. There was like, everything was in Cantonese and yeah. So that was terrible.
Okay. And speaking of, so if you felt a little bit isolated, but I guess determined, and how was it studying the psychology of martial arts communities in Hong Kong, because it's still it's a relatively minor or niche field, isn't it? I mean, is it a bit more mainstream in Hong Kong, or is it still a kind of an isolated
thing? No. So the thing is, I studied actually only European practitioners, because if you want to study the practitioners here, first you need to be fluent in Cantonese, and second, I really think that you need cultural psychologist for that, or someone in this kind of like knowledge.
Okay.
But yeah, getting into a PhD with this kind of topic was really difficult. I was lucky. You have to be lucky that some of the heads of the department will choose you, and then you have to go through either self-financed or two types of scholarship. Mm-hmm. So to get into one of those paths, except for the style of finance, it's really difficult. So there is almost nobody here doing anything about martial arts.
Okay.
I guess there are more people actually doing this topic in terms of film or arts, but okay. Psychology, sports, no.
Okay. So do you think, so most of the research that you did, most of the literature review and the relevant literature, that's been written outside of Hong Kong, is it? I guess you're pulling in from like American scholars and
most of them, yeah. But also the thing is that I couldn't look into Chinese written sources, which is shame. Yeah. But
okay.
Yeah.
And so if you published the psychological collectivism element in martial arts studies, what mm-hmm. are your plans for the mental toughness publication of the mental toughness side of things?
Oh, I haven't done it yet. I haven't published. I haven't written it yet.
Okay, what, you're too busy. But, too busy training on your own mental toughness.
Yeah, there were too many changes in my life. So, but like talking about mental toughness, there's actually one thing really interesting in my study that I want to mention, and that is, so I was looking at if people, how people become more mentally tough, and so I was checking like with number of competitions, or how long they have been practicing, or if they have been competing internationally, and none of these actually had any effect on the level of mental toughness. But there was one thing that was like important. So I wanted to see what is the level of the practitioner, and because there is nothing such as like belt ranking or anything objective I could use, standardized. So I asked people to how do they perceive themselves, beginner, intermediate, or advanced, like a teacher. And this is what was actually significant for mental toughness. So it doesn't matter how long you have been practicing, but if you see yourself as more advanced, your mental toughness is higher. So it's all about how you see yourself, not how actually how long is your experience or how many competitions you have been in.
So how do you define or quantify or demarcate mental toughness from other things? How do you actually verify its existence? How do you demarcate it?
I use a questionnaire, like a standardized questionnaire. Mental toughness is the term is in sports psychology. It means that even you are under pressure, you can still keep going, and you can not only you can keep going, but you can also still keep positive. So it's about controlling your emotions, controlling your thoughts, how you react under the pressure.
Okay. And so is there any way of objectively measuring or verifying that? I mean, what other methods could you have used? Could you have videoed training and kind of gone, oh, look, they've given up, they've started to cry, or they've tapped, or something. I mean, is there any way that you could do that kind of analysis or not?
I think like the sport researcher would really love to like take your blood and see, okay, your mental toughness level is 5. But no, I think just like, you know, questionnaires and interviews. That's it.
Okay. I think because in terms of, I mean, the concept of mental toughness to me seems metaphorical. I think that I accept that it exists. I'm wondering whether it exists in a kind of, in a practitioner discourse, like the people talk about people, because there's different ways of talking about that. Like, you got to watch him, he won't stop, or she will never stop, or, you know. But is it also like an academic construct? That is it like a psycho? Is it the construct of a psychologist, or is it one drawn from the real world in some way?
No, it's an academic thing.
Okay.
it's a construct, yeah.
Okay. Because I mean, when I well,
there's like lots of mental toughness is actually quite a huge topic in sports psychology.
Okay.
Besides, I mean psychology collectivism is very small. Psychological collectivism is quite a new topic. Collectivism is also quite big and, you know, old. But psychological collectivism is small, and mental toughness is also big, quite often done research, type of research.
Okay. And I mean, I was gonna ask about, because I've got an image in my head, a scenario that happened to me. I mean, I turned to Eskrima precisely because I wanted that challenge, like a really, like I didn't look forward to training ever. I used to worry about it for days in advance because it was going to be so traumatic and painful. But then I quit for a while and I went to judo, and I had no grappling experience of any kind other than takedowns and some throws in Eskrima. And when we were doing Randori and we were partnered with people, I just would not put in too much effort, because I knew that if I put in too much effort, then I would just be dead. And the people thought that I was quite tough, like quite resilient. But all I did was go, all I am going to do here now is survive, because that's all I can try and do. But it wasn't toughness. It was just like I'd learned how to be relaxed under pressure, not tough under pressure. Just like,
right,
I know I'm kind of fighting for my life, but I'm not going to fight for my life. I'm just going to frustrate this person's efforts. It's all I'm going to do.
So in the literature, there is a difference between resilience and mental toughness. So what you are saying now, that you are actually resilient.
Okay.
Resilient, because you were like, okay, I'm going to survive this. But mental toughness is, I'm going to survive this, and this is going to be awesome. Like, it's, you know, I'm going to die here, but I will enjoy it. It's like mental toughness.
Okay. Okay.
And in my qualitative part of my research, what came out from the interview was that Kung Fu teaches you how to be soft and round where you need it. So, like, not always you need to be the hard one, the aggressive one, but sometimes you just need to be soft and let things, you know, just like pass.
Yeah.
And also another thing, there was a concept of a switch that sometimes you switch on your like inner animal, that kind of like primal energy, the aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you switch it off, and this is what Kung Fu teach you as well. Not only your animal, but also how to use the switch.
Okay.
So that sounds similar to what you say.
Okay. All right. No, this is good. This is, so where's the best, other than in your unpublished PhD manuscript, mm-hmm. which are the best texts that people should explore if they're looking for concepts like these that they could bring to bear on their martial arts research?
Well, so this is kind of new.
Yeah.
So the concept like this, mm-hmm. I didn't really see anywhere.
Okay. So it's really just it's your PhD thesis.
Yeah, so the thing is, like, this is what happens with IPA, right? Topics just, you know, come on the surface. So this is what I was explaining to the local researchers who are all about quantitative numbers and hypotheses and yes or no, right? But yeah. This is like new thing here.
Yeah.
So I had big problems with that because they said this is not scientific.
Okay. So do you have no publication plans for that yet, because you're too busy?
I do as soon as possible, but it will take some time. I have some four papers so far, one from my master's thesis and like three from this one, but not with the results yet.
Okay. Well, there's one or two good journals out there that you should. there's one called Martial Arts Studies. Anyway. So the future for you at the moment, you're in a state of transition and you're going to explore new worlds. So what are your immediate plans?
So when the virus is gone, fight more and turn professional in MMA. I run this Facebook, Instagram website thing called Kung Fu Academic. This is where I start to publish my things about my research, but also now about fighting and coaching. So it's now all about like fighting, but also like connecting fighting and traditional Kung Fu and smart coaching. So, yeah.
Okay, so Kung Fu Academic, I saw that. I was looking at that, that video. It's Kung Fu Academic. Let's have a look. Well, it's, so what's the URL? There it is, kungfuacademic.net. This is you, isn't it?
Right, yeah, that's me.
And that's mainly your sort of CV. There are other pages, aren't there? There's other stuff associated with this.
Yeah. I try to publish lots of content, like, yeah. You know, videos and tutorials as well now.
Okay, I'm just trying to find Kung Fu Academic, but...
was there a few times already?
No, where is it? Anyway,
I found it. You can just type kungfuacademic.net.
Yeah, kungfuacademic.net, isn't it? There it is. Kung Fu.
Yeah.
That's the one we just, that's
yours. Yep, there.
Yeah. Okay, I'll stop that share then. Okay, so Veronica, it was great to see you again, and hopefully we'll meet at a conference at some point soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I plan to come again.
Yeah, maybe I'll come to one of your fights. But
it was
great to see you. Thanks for taking the time to talk. And
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, good luck with everything. See you later.
Thank you.